go! Welcome to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast with your host, Steve Schaubecker. Get ready to get behind the scenes look into what it really takes to grow a business from scratch in the firearms industry. Join us as we welcome industry titans, Second Amendment enthusiasts, and special guests each week. I welcome you to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast.
Welcome back to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast. This is Steve Schaubecker, your host. Got a very, very special guest with me today. I'm so excited about this one. We are so well aligned on so many things that I'm looking for a great conversation. Please help me welcome. This is Charles Covey from MyGrip, among many other things. How are you doing today, Charles?
Doing great. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so happy to have you. Ever since I got a taste of your product, I'm like, I have to have this guy on, and we have to get inside his entrepreneurial mind and find out what made this awesome invention happen. But why don't you just take a minute and tell our listeners kind of what you're up to these days and a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Yeah. So my entrepreneurial history started as a child. So as 8, 9 years old, I'm mowing every yard in the neighborhood and I'm knocking on doors and I want to be the best lawnmower that there ever was. And just always wanted to just do that, do the best job possible for my clients. And that has grown and morphed. And now we're doing a little bit bigger scale than the yard mowing, but the same principle of taking great care of clients and being the very best in our particular industries. And as I went to college, I had businesses throughout college in the construction space. And then after that, 2008 was challenging. And I had to go work for another company during that time frame after the crash. And I learned a lot in the commercial construction world. And I was always looking for ways to get back on my own. So ever since then, I've been working on my own in construction and now focusing more on land development, which is just kind of another iteration of that construction process, a little bit higher up the food chain. And that's been really fascinating. I have other projects, and MyGrip kind of was birthed out of just a passion for liking guns and liking custom guns and things that really were special to me. And that's where MyGrip was born. So we've got a few other businesses like MyGrip that are kind of passion projects and something that I do. And, you know, so those ideas come to you. And as an entrepreneur, it's maybe I shouldn't chase after these things, but I really enjoy it. So it's as much of a hobby chasing after some of these other side businesses, because I really enjoy it and the creativity and that whole process of creating something from nothing. And that's how MyGrip was born. So we wanted to create something new and different in the marketplace. Couldn't find it anywhere. I tried to find it to buy it. Didn't exist. So we had to build it from scratch. And that's been a fascinating process.
That's awesome. It's be so interesting to hear the story behind MyGrip, because it's such a unique piece. No one's ever tried it in the marketplace. The closest thing is would be probably like, they have the grips that you can take and adjust somewhat, and they have little sliding pieces and whatnot. But at the end of the day, the pieces are the same size, and the pieces aren't molded to you the way that yours is. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about how did you come up with the idea for MyGrip? What even made you think about that you could do it, and then that you could do it the way that you do?
Well, my approach to anything that I ever do is that there's always a better way. So it doesn't matter if I'm paying, a bunch of money for a nice car. I'm just going to assume that there's a better way out there. Maybe nobody's done it yet, but there's always a better way. So nobody's achieved perfection yet. And so I'm always looking at everything that I do and like, how could I do this better? And it's almost a disease. So everything I see, my wife, it drives her nuts because I'm coming up with these ideas all the time. Hey, you know what? You know, this cheese slicer, I think you could do it better. I think we could do it better. And, I haven't really tackled the cheese slicer yet, but every time I see one of those things in the marketplace, I'm like, I think we could probably do some brainstorming and come up with a better option. So that's just how my brain's always going, always looking for a different creative approach. And so with the grip, as I'm out on the range and we're shooting, and I'm doing a lot more tactical training at this particular time frame, and I had built a not really nice shooting range for us to go play on. And as I was building my collection and adding more and more ARs to it, I really was trying to find that next level of customization and also a way that just really fit better. And then I started doing a little bit of long range shooting, and every platform that I have, I just really wanted it to be custom to me. And so I could really get on that platform and just run it to a whole different greater degree of accuracy. And I like to be extremely, extremely accurate with my shooting. And so as I was dialing in all these different platforms, I kept coming up to the grip as something that I could do better. And I looked in the marketplace, just couldn't find it. And so yeah, so then we just started playing around with it. It was a multi-year process and plenty of failures. And we're not quite to the Edison level. What, he have several hundred or a thousand different filaments before he was able to get light? I think we're at probably 30 or 40 iterations before we ever got it to work.
Well, I will tell you that the product you've came up with now is quite impressive. You know, it was awesome of you guys to make one up for me when I was down your way a couple months ago, and I put it on a couple different of my firearms since then. And boy, the one thing I will notice about it the best is that it definitely helps my accuracy. It definitely helps the feel. But the one thing that I've noticed is it helps with the comfort. You know, especially on longer days, you know, like you're probably a lot like me. If I'm going to go out to the range, I'm there for a specific purpose. And a lot of the stuff I do these days is tactical in nature. So I'm going to drill something, and I'm going to drill it, and I'm going to drill it some more. And I found that, you know, since putting the MyGrip on my primary AR, I can definitely put a lot more rounds down range without fatigue. And even the time in between drills, you know, when I'm holding my firearm, it's just that much more comfortable. So kudos to what you've come up with. I can definitely see it growing quite a bit. And once you put someone in someone's hand, it's almost impossible to go back to a traditional grip.
I tell people this when they buy one, I tell them, be careful because you are broken after this. No other grip will ever feel the same. It doesn't matter. Whatever gun you put that on is going to be your go-to from here on. It's just like, don't put it on the 300 blackout unless you want to spend a lot of money on 300 blackout ammo. Okay. Because it's going to be your favorite because it just feels that much better. And I'm 100% in agreement with you. When I'm at the range, just that comfort level, and it feels more like an extension of the body. And so at least for me, that connection to the hand, that the hand is a really interesting thing from a psychological standpoint. The things that we feel with our palm and with our fingertips, like what that does to our brain is very significant. And so the comfort thing is part of it, but also the mental connection of the weapon connecting to the brain. I think there's just a very different level when you've got that really great fit. So I noticed that I perform better. I think better. I run the gun at a higher level when I've got that in my hand. So for me, it's been a lot of fun. And I think everybody that's tried it so far has had really, really good feedback. A lot of special ops and the former SEAL team guys, they've absolutely loved it.
I'd absolutely agree. I had a couple of our local guys that I know that are SWAT guys by nature, and they spend so much time handing with their guns in their hands, you know, on a scene or whatnot, and let them play with mine a little bit. And just in the concept of it, they're like, wow, this is definitely going to take off in many ways. So what kind of led you down the custom gun path? What was your first custom gun you ever purchased or had built, I should say?
So the first major one that I had done, I would always have the gunsmith do Cerakote or painting or other things like that. So we had a bunch of them done that way. I had a long range rifle built from scratch. And so that one was the first one that I had done that was just one off, you know, completely custom from the ground up to my specs. And realizing what that's like to have a gun that's really designed just for you. In fact, if I'm thinking back, I did have a gun built. I forgot about this one. I had a 300 Win Mag built by a company for, it was for mountain hunting. So it was all titanium, carbon fiber, super, super lightweight. I mean, it'll kick your teeth, but super lightweight for carrying in the mountains. And I had that one built, and it was, you know, the first one they'd ever done that way. And I realized then that custom is definitely a different feeling than buying something standard. And, you know, just that extra level of knowing that, hey, this is just for me. It's just the way I want it. And I really appreciate that. I like that in cars. I like that in other things. So I always want that different next level of customization. You see that in your industry. You know, there's a lot of guys like you and I that really are passionate about their firearms, and going to get it customized to their taste is there's something that really feels good about having a custom weapon.
Absolutely. We usually see it. It's almost like an addiction. You start off and you're just got a little taste for it. And you know, they'll buy, like, it typically starts out for the folks we see typically in the AR-15 or AR-10 platforms, just because there are just so many options out there as far as things you can do to them. So they'll buy a stock gun, sometimes even a nice stock gun, you know, mid to upper tier. And then they will start running it and they'll realize, I don't quite like this trigger. This charging handle doesn't quite do it for me. this front rail, I don't know if I'm a fan. And this grip, you know, just changing this and changing that. And next thing you know, half of the original gun is gone. The money they spent would have been, you know, they could have literally built a custom gun and a half what they wanted and even had a nice Cerakote job in there for the same price. Yeah. But they learned lessons of, I mean, it's just like cars, like anything else, you know, it's like if you're going to order it as well equipped as you possibly can. And there's some things you can't order on it. Then you have to go custom. But if you can at least get it as much of what you want in the beginning, that just puts you that much farther ahead of the game, as opposed to having this pile of parts. And like for me, then what happens with the pile of parts is, oh, well, I got some parts here that will go towards another gun. And then you build another gun, and then you build another gun. And then it just, next thing you know, you forget how many you have.
Yeah. And then you're buying more safes and coming up with reasons that you can keep expanding the collection. It's not like an addiction. It's actually an addiction.
It is.
But, I'm happily addicted. So I'm in the addicted club. If they had a 10-step program to get out of it, I don't know that I'd participate, because I enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I always tell folks too, is with the gun industry, I said, there's a lot worse of investments you can make. I mean, if you decide to go down the boat path, you know, I've seen so many guys they'll buy a new boat, and you know, they'll spend $100,000 on a boat, and 5 years down the road, they're lucky if they have a $50,000 boat. You know, if you buy $100,000 in guns, and you buy some, make some reasonably good decisions, you know, buy some good quality things, and in 5 years, you'll probably still have $100,000 in guns, or pretty close. Or if you do well, you'll have much more than $100,000 in guns, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. I've been studying that a lot with my own collection. So as I've grown the collection, yeah, I've got all kind of the boxes checked now of the basic things that I need, you know, like in all the scenarios that I either hunt in or shoot in, I've got something that checks that box. So now I'm looking at what is the next iteration of the collection. And so it's been a very interesting kind of analysis. Okay, so we got a lot of guns, but it's not about a lot at this point. Now it's not about a number. It's about what are the things that I really enjoy, and what are the things that also, to your point, are collectible and make sense as a, you know, as investment grade. So I'm looking at the collection a little bit differently now. Hey, what are the things that I can acquire that are going to be investment grade, that are going to appreciate a value? Usually that has to do with scarcity, you know, things that are harder to get a hold of. And so that's been kind of interesting to kind of go through what the next iteration of my collection is going to be like. It's going to be, I'm excited. I think there's going to be some pretty cool pieces that we had.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting once you shift, you know, working in the industry and seeing all these cool things come in and knowing all the cool things that our company could build for me, and all the regular boxes are definitely checked. And then now I start looking for unique things. Like I had came across a Derringer by Bond Arms, and it was called the Wicked. And it was basically, if you've seen John Wick 3, it was the gun that they made for the movie that are the first shots fired in the movie when the doctor shoots him. So it's a Derringer. It comes with two barrels, a 45 long Colt /410, and then a 9mm, as was shown in there. And they only made 1,000 of them. And I came across one that was number, I think, 57. And I scooped that up very, very quickly, and just, you know, that, but that'll be something I'll never shoot it. But it's just, it's really cool to have. It has a story. Of, you know, what makes it unique, and they only made so many of them, so you have the scarcity. So and obviously the John Wick trifecta of movies is pretty darn popular, so we're hoping that neat conversation piece, and you know, probably pick up some value. So it's neat to get things like that are just unique, and you know, not your run of the mill. I mean, there's certainly a place for, you know, Glocks and stuff like that, but those, to me, those are more different tools. Those are more of like a weapon of war, if you will. That'd be something I would certainly grab to defend my home, but that wouldn't be something that's, you know, really unique in any way. I guess sometimes I picked up a 19M that was new in the box. Basically, that's they make a 19M and a 17M that's really for departments. They don't sell them to civilians. It's for the FBI had designed it for their duty weapon, and then they do a Glock to sell to some large law enforcement agencies, some state agencies and whatnot. But you don't come across them very often, very, very, very rare. So some really unique things about it. So another neat collector's piece. But stuff like that I enjoy. That's just, hey, tell a story about it. What is it? No, it's not just a gun that, you know, shoots. It's something that has a story and is a little bit on the unique side.
Yeah. What are where are you at on suppressors? I don't have a lot of suppressed stuff, but I'm going to focus a little bit more on that this year. Share about your suppressed stuff. Any integral barrel suppressed stuff?
I own zero because I live in a communist state. So I live in the communist state of Illinois. Our Dyer store does deal in suppressors, and just got started. Just got their SOT and their class three. And then our manufacturing company actually has a class two, so we can manufacture those also. So that's something we'll definitely be diving into a lot deeper. We're looking very, very deeply into what items we can add to our custom catalog. Unique pistol formation versions, some pistol caliber stuff. So that's future. I'm not too deep into that right now because we can't be, I couldn't be to this point for personal collection anyway, but, in the future, definitely.
Nice. What's something else that your listeners want to know about, either collecting guns, shooting experiences? You know, what's something we can provide that'd be?
Well, I think they'd actually love to hear definitely about a little bit more about the story of, how you started My Grip, and from an entrepreneurial perspective. We have a lot of gun shop owners and a lot of other people in the industry that do listen. And I think they would love to hear the story of, okay, so you got this idea. You know, what did you do next? How did that come to be? And you know, where is it at right now? And where would you like to see it go? What's your dream for it?
Sure. Okay. So the inventing process is one that's fascinating because a lot of people have ideas, and ideas are awesome, but unfortunately ideas aren't worth shit. Can I cuss on here? Is that okay?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So ideas aren't worth anything in and of themselves. So then it's about, what do you do with that idea once you have it? And so there's hundreds of thousands of ideas I've had that I've tossed because either I was too lazy in my younger years to do something with it, and then somebody went and invented it and put it on the market and it did well. And it's, a lot of us have had that scenario, and you're just kicking yourself. You're like, I had that idea. I should have made that money, but you didn't. So then as an inventor, now I have to think about, okay, when I come to this idea, I have to go through a quick set of check downs of, is this idea already in the space? Which doesn't make it a bad idea. It just means it might already be out there commercialized. Somebody's already spent that front end money. Well, if it's not already out there, is it commercially viable? So do people really want to buy it? And then that's a hard one to always analyze correctly. And then if people do want to buy it, is it something that you can produce and something that there's a methodology to get to? So we had a couple of these were kind of hurdles as the My Grip idea came to be, and I'll dive into that. So when I thought about being able to create a grip that was custom, I was already working in the 3D printing space with our construction business. And so we were custom 3D printing tools that we were using to apply joint sealants in the field. So a lot of our work involved waterproofing and the building envelope, keeping moisture out of the building. So we were using 3D printed tools in this space, and it was really revolutionary, very cool. So we had 3D printing capacity and some nicer machines in our shop. So I at least had that capacity to do that. These were probably like $10,000 or $12,000 machines at that time. So a little more than your hobby printer. So we had that capacity. We had a CAD designer in-house. So we just started kind of playing with it, printing out a few things, kind of coming up with ways you could get a better shape. And then we realized, okay, more than just a better shape, it needs to be custom. So if it's going to be custom, how do we go about grabbing the data from the hand? That's the challenge. How do I get the data and then have a method to then put that data into a computer and be able to print it? So we tried a bunch of different kinds of clay. We thought modeling clay would work. And actually made some grips this way. So we'd mold it on modeling clay on a kind of stripped down core of an AR grip. So it had the same shape at the top and the same length of grip. And then we would wrap a bunch of modeling clay around it, and I would squeeze it. That worked okay. A little bit messy. The clay wasn't going to work. You know, I couldn't ship it to you and make it work because the clay would get crunchy and dry and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So not practical, but at least kind of got us a first start that, okay, it is in theory possible. So we were able to 3D scan, and there's even stuff now. The equipment has developed quite a bit. You can 3D scan with your phone and get nearly a good enough quality file to send to your computer and print it. So there's some really amazing technology with 3D scanning. We've got a pretty high end scanner, and we're able to put on a turntable, spin the grip around. And so now we realized, okay, we could do this. We put it on the gun. It does work. But how are we going to do this in a manner that's production oriented, where we can do thousands of these, you know, one at a time with some modeling clay, and then not going to cut it. That's not a business. That's a hobby. And so then we worked through a bunch of different foams and different types of core, like the core that would the foam would go on, and how we could get that to a customer in a manner that was, you know, that was safe, efficient, predictable, and we could get the same result. And so there was that was really where a lot of the time went, was finding a foam that was functional and that worked in all the scenarios that we had. So we ended up having to get a foam custom formulated for us. And that custom formulated foam had to be a certain color because our scanner picked up certain colors better. We made a foam in white or black. It didn't pick up the detail. It had to be gray. Obviously, trial and error. So that's usually how these things happen. You screw it up a few times and then you figure out how it needs to be. Turns out there's no playbook. You can't go to the library and pull a book on how to make, you know, 3D printed AR grips. There's just no, there's no set of criteria. So then as we were working through the foam, it had to also cure once somebody grips it, then you need the foam to cure and get hard to where it doesn't get damaged on the way back, but it's got to be wet when it gets there. So how do you make all that happen? You got to form it, keep the foam moist. So it's got to be vacuum sealed. And then when they open the package, you know, you've got a window of a few hours to form it and then let it air dry overnight and then send it back to us. So that process took probably 6 or 8 months to really dial it in, longer than I would have liked, but getting the foam made and having a custom formulation was definitely a challenging part of the process. Probably the longest time frame of all of it was the software model. So we had to build a software program to process the information. I didn't want a smooth grip. I want to be able to incorporate different textures. And you saw that when you were here in our facility. We've got different textures that you can pick. So we've got 8 that we currently use. We've tried many, many dozens of different textures. And so in order to do the texture, you've got to scan the molded grip. Then the computer has to overlay the texture. So you're taking a flat, you know, imagine a piece of paper, which is how the texture is designed as a file in a flat form, like a piece of paper. And then you wrap that around a grip that isn't like a piece of paper. And so the computer program has to make all the adjustments to stretch and shape and mold this texture around a nonlinear shape. So that was a very, very challenging process. So we had to end up writing this software program from scratch to do it. And that took us several months. So the whole process, probably from the time I had the idea until we had a really production level ready to go to 1,000 customers product, in about 2 years. Could have been shortened a little bit. I think we could have shortened that by 6 or 8 months had we been doing nothing but that process. But it definitely takes time, definitely takes money. We've found all kinds of ways to screw it up. Another item that was really interesting, I mentioned technologies advancing. We did not have the availability of really high quality production level 3D printers at the time I had the idea. So they were still, even the ones that we had that were $10,000 or $11,000, you could still see the layer lines, and it still wasn't a nice finished product that could compete, you know, right next to something that was injection molded. But as the idea was developing, some new machines were coming out that use lasers, and they use a laser process where it lays down powder and then traces each layer with the laser and builds it up. You don't really see layer lines in these, and they're very, very high quality, very high detail. And those are very expensive machines, $40,000 or $50,000. And so those machines came out towards the end of when we were about ready for this product to go to market. We just didn't have a way to produce it. And about that time is when the machines were finally available that could actually make the product the way we wanted. So really good timing. If these machines hadn't come out, we would still be sitting on an idea that we couldn't produce. So fortunately, the technology was kind of catching up with us as the idea developed.
Oh, that's amazing. Just, I think the one thing that people don't realize is really how long it takes. You know, you see the finished product and you see all the, everything that you're doing now. And then you just don't know, like, okay, the couple years literally that went into this, getting this process. And I will tell you, just from having, you know, went through the molding and whatnot and then got the finished script. I mean, it is pretty smooth. It's pretty neat. You know, what seems on the surface to be a simple process was clearly very, very complex on the back end and getting it to that point. So that's really neat. Now, one question for you. So once your grips are digitized, so say I purchase a grip from you and then I mold, do you store that information so I can more easily order additional grips, or how does that work?
Yeah, we do. So we've got that for you. And if you like it, it fits great. Then you can just order, you know, like for my collection, I've got the majority of my ARs have my grip on it, and it's all from the same original file. Now, occasionally somebody will have multiple use cases. So I'll give you an example. Like if you've got a gun that you're shooting long range, you're going to be shooting prone, shooting 1,000 yards on, like say you've got a, you know, 6.5 Creedmoor or something else in an AR platform, longer distance, you're going to want to hold that grip a little bit different than you are a gun that you're going to be doing a bunch of tactical stuff, like you're clearing rooms and using, going around barricades, a lot of movement. The way your hand's going to sit on that grip is going to be different. The way you're going to be using the hand off and on the grip, you know, operating the gun, safety on and off, trigger finger is going to be shaped. You'll be kind of doing different things. And so a lot of times people will get a different grip made for a different use case. So the way I shoot long range, if I'm shooting 1,000 yards out to a mile, you know, I'm going to have my fingertips, I'm not going to wrap around the grip, because I don't when that, when I squeeze that trigger, I don't want to rack the gun at all. So I'm going to keep my hands going to be mostly off the grip, and my fingertips are going to be on the very front edge of that grip. Well, so I've got one molded for that, and it's a little bit different. My fingers just go right to the right spot. I'm not twisting that gun or doing anything to send that bullet off the right path, squeeze the trigger, and I'm there. Totally different grip pattern than what I'm going to use on my tactical guns.
Oh, that's very interesting. I'd imagine too, is just kind of quite an advantage. I can imagine with that style of grip, especially long range, just not being comfortable. I think that's one thing for me shooting long range. It's hard to get comfortable. It's not easy, but I'd imagine, I never thought about using a mic grip for that. Boy, it's very, very interesting.
Yeah. You see a lot of the different chassis platforms have the ability to bolt on an AR style grip. And so ours works really, really well for that.
Interesting. How has it been accepted so far? Have you had good customer acceptance? Do people get it? I'd imagine it would be something that would take some communicating. You know, I mean, obviously I had the advantage of having it, you know, you guys explain it directly to me and show me, and then it's completely clear. Especially once you put it in your hand, it's done. But I'd imagine there has to be a gap for you trying to communicate that to people with audio video. How are you jumping that hurdle, if you will?
Yeah, that one's been interesting because most of my business experience has been business to business selling. And so I have a very high comfort level business to business. And that's where our sweet spot is, especially in our construction and land development. Well, this is a business to consumer product, and it's a different space for us to really learn marketing and understanding, you know, how do you sell a product that never existed before? So you think about it, you know, if I need to go sell any other standard AR part, or if I need to go sell any kind of widget that already exists in the marketplace, I can use Google and I can use AdWords and I can use a lot of these things that people are going to look for. You know, for example, our friends that own different companies that sell products that are standardized type products, you know, people are searching for that. I need a hat with this color. So black hats, you could type in black hats in Google and a bunch of things are going to come up, and people can use that and leverage that search to get you to their website. Nobody's going to type in custom AR grip because they don't know it exists yet. So that's a very interesting thing to kind of, everyone that sees it and runs a gun with it, oh, sold. They're sold. They're going to tell their buddies, absolutely. And so the word of mouth marketing has been fantastic. You know, all the special ops and the SEAL teams guys, they tell their friends, they tell the people that they train. You know, a lot of those guys are consultants now. So they, word of mouth has been amazing. But on a bigger scale, it's been really fascinating to try to sell a product that nobody knows to look for. And so that's been fun to really experiment with marketing. And we're starting to pick up quite a bit of traction, at least recently. And we've got some kind of adjusted marketing efforts that we're starting this month that will really focus on trying to get that to people that didn't know it existed. So that's very challenging, but has been fun.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Do you ever see yourself? We have quite a few different gun shop owners and custom builders that listen that do it. You know, that do it for a living. 07s, 01s. Do you ever see this as something that will be a dealer program offered, or some way for them to more easily sell it to their customers?
Yeah, we would like to work with dealers. So if there's a dealer or a customizer out there that would be interested, please contact us, because I think that's a really good relationship, because you already have somebody coming to you that is saying, hey, I want a custom gun. I want you to do Cerakote, or I want you to change this thing for me, or put a new trigger in, and you can show them this product, and they're, you're going to have already developed a rapport. They're going to trust you, and you can show them how effective it is. And that's a much better way to promote this product than us just sending them a, you know, some silly ad on Instagram or Facebook. So I would much rather have that person to person with people that are trusted in the space. That's a much better way to position the product. And we're definitely looking for those relationships.
That's great. I guarantee you any of these guys put it in their hands, they will get it. They will understand it. And for us, I'm not sure, it varies by dealer, but for us, like when we're building a complete custom gun, when they're kind of starting, hey, we are walking through a part selection process anyway. So we were literally going through, okay, well, here's all your lowers. These are the options. These are the differences. Okay, pick one. Now we're going to go to the to an upper. Okay, what caliber are we going? What barrel length? You know, all those other sorts of things. What kind of barrel? So it's just going to be, it would just be another aspect of them. Just say, hey, another choice to make. You know, and it's definitely interesting in the building world, because you'll kind of have it's about a 70-30. So 70% of the customers or so want their gun to just perform as best as possible. The other 30% don't care how it performs. They just want it to look tactical. But there's a large percentage of people that once you put it in their hands, they're going to be, I think they're going to be all over. It's very, very exciting. I love to see new products like this come to market and people to embrace it and things to evolve, you know.
We're pretty sure that there's going to be copycats in the marketplace. It's too interesting and the market is too big for this to not get copied. So it's going to happen at some point. That'll be a compliment to us, because we were definitely the first ones. But the challenge of being first is that when you're innovative and you're setting the standard, there's no pre-existing playbook for how to market or how to promote or how to talk about it. So that part has been really fascinating as an innovator in other types of business. I'm kind of used to this happening. So, I'm comfortable with this result. I like being the first to the party.
Yeah, that's a great place to be, especially in a situation like this, where sure, they can try to copy your foam or imagine what your process is or whatnot. It's going to take them some time. I think once it gets popular, it's definitely going to take them some time. But you know what? I look at it like this way, like for us, like we definitely take the same mentality that you have of, we want to be innovating. We want to see how we can make it better for people. We don't want to just go with, you know, the way things have always been done. I'm sure you can testify to this too, as much as I can, of the firearms industry is kind of old boys clubbish, where the things are just done the way they've always been done. And this is the way we've been doing it for 20 years. There's no reason to change it. You know, you walk into gun shops in most of the United States and about probably 80%, you're going to see three things. You're going to see probably some dark paneled walls. You're going to see some few animals hanging there. And you're going to see a whole lot of glass cases. And you're going to see two grumpy guys behind the counter. And that's a staple of the gun shop. And as many new shooters as we're seeing come into the sport, to the, you know, for a lot of different reasons, for sport, I mean, to me, it's aromatherapy. It's way cheaper than paying a psychiatrist. And just the fact it's a great way to relax. People don't realize that it's almost meditative a lot of times when you're trying to relax and hit your target, especially some of the long range stuff, that we're getting such an influx of new consumers coming into it. A lot of people thought they would never even like to, or never even wanted to own a gun. In last year, you're in Texas. So you took number two to our communist state. But last year, Illinois, 8.8 million guns sold or 8.8 million background checks run. So at least 8.8, assuming they all purchased one. Texas was number two at like 1.9 million guns last year. So, and then number three was Indiana at 1.8, which is, most of them were right across our border over in Northwest Indiana. But just it's definitely taking off. There's definitely a lot of people realizing how great this sport is and how it's just a lot of fun and it's relaxing. And so it's just a great thing to do.
Yeah, I think we're in a very exciting time in the sport. So it, a lot of people are realizing that you don't have to necessarily be a hunter, although that's a great thing to do. You don't necessarily have to be, you know, an old country boy that, you know, has the gun in the back window of his truck. The gun culture is becoming very different. I see guys pull up to the range in their sports car and they'll pull out their gun. And that's just part of the thing that they do as the, you know, as part of their world. And we see all kinds of different people in the sport. So it's really fascinating because I think that the breadth of reach that the sport has right now is really fascinating. So it's an exciting time to be involved.
Oh, absolutely. That's our thing. We just love when people come into our shops because we do it a little different. We don't have a single glass case. We don't, there's really in our new store, there's no counters. It's completely think like Apple Store or gun shops. And it's interesting because some of the comments we get out of people like, boy, this was actually nice to shop. This wasn't actually anything like I thought it would be. And I guess the best comment I've heard or the funniest one was, and I don't know if he was being serious, but it seemed like what he was. I said, well, what's the biggest surprise you had, you know, about buying your first gun? He goes, well, you guys have more teeth than I imagined. More teeth. I'm like, I guess he was totally expecting some backwoods folks to be working at a gun shop, even though it's in Chicago. You know, I guess I don't know, but it's a lot of fun. It's neat to educate people. It's neat to you know, show them the possibilities and all the things that they can get into. And I'm just we're certainly excited about being able to see our clients with my grip also.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But hey, it's been great talking to you, Charles. Thank you so much for coming on. I will have all your contact information in the show notes. So hopefully some of these dealers that are out there and builders can certainly get on the train early as opposed to late and let their customers see what MyGrip has to offer them.
Yeah, we'd love to collaborate. You know, we're just here to enjoy something that we love. We're passionate about a lot like your listeners. And so we'd love to have everybody reach out. Let's have a conversation. Let's see what possibilities there are. And we'd love to have some more contacts in the gun industry.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast. If you're still listening to this episode, that means you gained some type of value. So if you could share this to a friend, leave a review, and make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode of Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast.